May 26, 1992. I'm about to interview Richard J. Murphy, no relation. Graduated in 1952 in Phi Ed, was a member of the boxing team under John Walsh, and won the NCAA championship at 155 pounds in 1951. His career has apparently been spent in Madison as a beer distributor. So I'm now going to go interview. Oh, the name on student records, if there's any confusion, apparently he was J. John Richard Murphy, and someplace along the line changed it to Richard John Murphy.
Should have this thing ready at least. I put the tape on and tested it at home. Okay, we could just start with Dick. How did you box in high school, or how it got you interested in boxing here?
I started in the Golden Gloves in Milwaukee in 1945.
Okay.
And my parents didn't want to give me permission, so I took a false name. A friend of mine, whose name was O'Reilly, so I went under the name of Patrick O'Reilly. And I had run in a CYO track meet in Milwaukee the previous summer, and the commissioner, and I don't know if you'd call it the commissioner, but one of the AAU officials was also active in a CYO, and he had been at the CYO meet when I had run in the half mile and won it, and he'd give me the medal.
Okay.
And when he then attended the Golden Gloves, he said, that kid's name isn't Murphy, his name, or O'Reilly, his name is Murphy. So they caught me, and then of course they went to my mother and father, and then they subsequently gave me permission, and I didn't win it that year. I lost in the finals, and the next year I did win the Golden Gloves, and John Walsh and Vern Woodward were in attendance. So they asked me, would I be interested in coming to school? And I have to tell you the truth, I really wasn't, because I wasn't very good. I really didn't care a lot about school. And I then went into the service, and while I was in the service, I kind of looked around. I thought, maybe I better reconsider this. So I got out of the service in December 1947. And I went down to the Golden Gloves, which was happening at that time, and I ran into Vern Woodward again, and he said, well, I want you to come up to Madison with me. So I did come up, and I, by golly, I decided, I was working, as soon as I'd gotten out of the Army, I went to work for the Milwaukee, Wisconsin Bell Telephone Company.
Okay.
And I'd worked there 2 or 3 weeks, so I thought, well, I'm going to go to college, mm-hmm. after talking to Vern.
Mm-hmm.
And I quit the job, and I started whenever that started, the latter part of January or February, then it was a different semester
system. Break, yeah, yeah.
So I started in January, February 48, and
okay.
That's how I got up
okay.
there.
So you were a little bit older, or you were about like the rest of us vets.
Yes,
then,
yes,
you? Yeah.
Yes.
When were you born? I didn't have
10-21-28.
28, okay.
See, when I graduated from high school in June of 46, that summer I was a counselor at a boys' camp.
Okay.
And then right after that finished, I joined the Army, and I was in the paratroopers, and I it was really a good deal. I was only
yeah.
in for
yeah.
from September of 46 to December of 47.
Okay.
So it worked out really well.
Great, okay. John was laughing when I interviewed him, because he said his great reputation as a coach, and he said he really felt it was because he just worked your tails off.
He did.
Was he?
Oh yeah, he and John and Vern both were. Well, first of all, they really took an interest. You know, as I look back, you change. As you get older, you kind of look back. And at the time, I'm sure I really didn't appreciate the opportunity that they gave me and that I had, to participate in that program, because. They cared about you. They cared about the school. They insisted that you do your work, and they had a great training program. He cared a lot about. He knew that if you weren't in shape, you weren't going to win. It was simple as that.
Yeah.
So they did. They worked you real hard, physically and on technique. They were great on technique, And I'm sure that's the two put together. That's part of the reason they were so successful.
Okay.
I would think.
Okay. Were you at 155 all the time?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, the very first fight I had, now let me think back. Yeah. The very first fight I had at Wisconsin was at Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And I fought the reigning national champion, a fellow by the name of Cody Connell, and I'm pretty sure I fought at 165.
Okay, oh, okay.
Yeah. And then there were a couple of other occasions that the first fight I had at Madison was the reigning champion, Herb Carlson. And I'm sure that was 165.
So you went down 10 pounds then?
Well, I really didn't. I didn't weigh 165, oh. But what they did, sometimes they would match styles or match, yeah. You know, people.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure both of those two first fights were at 165, and both of them were reigning national champions.
Okay.
So I won, I beat Cody Connell, and I lost to Herb Carlson. Coincidentally, the only two fights I ever lost here were my very first fight against Herb Carlson,
uh-huh.
And my very last fight against Bill Miller, who was the person I had beaten three times.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So in between, yeah. I hadn't...
You
I
did fine. You did fine. Did you go on... Now, there's like a second string in boxing, on mm-hmm. the boxing team, too, mm-hmm. wasn't it? Were you first string, so to speak, right off the bat?
Yeah, oh,
you
yeah.
were.
Yeah, oh,
great,
yeah.
great, great, great. Yeah. Yeah. What did you think made you a pretty good boxer? And don't be modest. I mean, you know, you have to.
Well, I say this jokingly, but it's true. I was always afraid of getting hit, so I.
You move fast.
So I moved a lot.
But you had quite a punch.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't really much of a puncher. I was more of a counter puncher.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. To tell you the truth, the toughest fights that we had were right here in training. You know, stop and think. I used to spar with Bob Rank, who was probably the best collegiate heavyweight there ever was. I used to spar with Ray Zale,
okay.
who was a national champion a year later. I used to spar with Bobby Meath, who was a national champion later. I used to spar with Bobby Morgan, who was a national champion later. I used to spar with Pat Sreenan, who was a national champion.
Yeah, yeah.
And I want to tell you, we had some real battles.
Well, Sreenan was a light earlier, wasn't
he? No, he was 145 pounds.
Oh, okay.
But we spar, you know, I sparred down to 145. I sparred up to heavyweight with Bob Rink.
Okay.
So I always said some of the toughest fights I ever had was right here in training.
Okay.
Yeah, that was really true.
Okay. Yeah. Was there an attitude one way or another on the part of the faculty in those days?
There was always somewhat of a resistance to the boxing program. As a matter of fact, I remember it was Professor Morton. I always call him Salt. I remember him because there was Morton Salt.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I started my first year, he and some other people had created a lot of pressure against the boxing program. So I think somewhat reluctantly, John Walsh and Dr. Bleckman and Dr. Carreri, who also had been a boxer.
Yeah.
And Vern Woodward, they agreed to participate in this once and for all physical that they were going to perform on boxers. And they started this program, and they tell me it's one of the most extensive programs ever conducted on a group of athletes. They had the electroencephalogram machine in the training quarters. When we sparred, we came right out, they put the thing on our head. They shipped it around the country to different boxing matches. When we came out, the first thing we'd have to do is go back in the dressing room and they put the things on our head. They subjected us to all kinds of visual tests over the 3 year period this lasted.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Hearing tests. I don't really remember all of it, but I know that it was a really, really extensive test that the medical group, along with Dr. Morton, said that they were going to do and that they were going to prove that boxing was very detrimental.
Was Morton an MD?
He was a professor or something.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, but he was, for some reason, he took it upon himself that he either didn't like boxing or I suppose he was sincere, that he felt it was very detrimental and he was going to prove that it didn't belong. Well, the results The results of the test were absolutely negative.
Okay.
Totally negative.
Okay.
And but see, this has always been here, this little stigma about boxing, you know, the primary intention of boxing is to hurt somebody.
Yeah.
Well, that's really not true. But I can tell you this, I played football. And whether anybody is ever going to admit it or not, the primary basic intention of 11 defensive football players is to get the guy, to get him and to hurt him. And you can go to high school games. You can go, and not that I'm against football.
No,
believe me, because I love football. I wanted to be a football player, but that makes another point. You know, as long as we're talking about, I wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
I played freshman football here.
Okay.
I wasn't big enough. I wasn't strong enough. I wasn't good enough. I wanted to play basketball. I did play basketball in high school. I wasn't good enough. I wanted to be a track man. I wasn't fast enough.
Yeah.
I tried wrestling. I wasn't strong enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I had my chance to express myself in whatever way it was in the sport of boxing. And I think it was absolutely horrible that they discontinued this program, because it was, if boxing ever had a hope, it was in programs like this.
Mm-hmm.
And they took it in one fell swoop, and they discarded it. At the time they did that, I was living in Ohio. And I wrote a letter to the Lower Region, and I said, you know, God forbid the football player gets killed. But what are you going to do if a football player gets killed? You know, when you participate in a contact sport, and there's plenty of them, you know, football, basketball, you know, the key is that you have good equipment, that you have good coaching, and there's an element of risk. You know, and there you can get hurt. You know,
good. Tennis,
and
you could...
absolutely, and for them too, you know, they always say, oh, but the primary intention is to hurt somebody.
Yeah. Which, and you always wore, for the benefit of the transcriber, who was going to be too young to remember, you always wore protective headgear, you always had the...
Well, that's kind of a, it's a good point to bring up, because there's two kind of headgears. There's training headgears, which are really, they have big padding all over, and they really do... stop the effect of a blow. The boxing headgear that we wore really had, it was just skin tight leather, like pigskin leather.
That's right.
It had a very small sponge that went across the top of the eyebrows, which stopped cuts.
Yeah.
It had a sponge that went around the ear that stopped the cauliflower ear. If you got a, in the big part, it had a sponge in the back, so that if you did get knocked down, a lot of people are injured when there's kind of a whiplash, and you go back and you smack your head on it, and it had a sponge. But as far as stopping the effect of a blow,
it doesn't do that much good at all.
None.
Yeah, pretty.
And it was John Walsh's feeling, and Burns too, that they should use these fighting headgears in a professional boxing matches.
Uh-huh.
Because they didn't stop the effect of the punch. They did, as I said, stop the cuts. It stopped the ear, cauliflower ear, and it stopped the smacking of the head.
Okay.
And if you watch, many of the people that really do get seriously hurt, you get it when they have that whiplash effect when they hit the canvas. That's how they really get hurt.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And of course, they all wear mouth good.
Yeah.
Mouth,
yeah.
Person, yeah. But I felt, you know, it's just amazing to me. To this day, here I am, 63-year-old gray-haired guy, you know, and I'll go into some places and say, are you Dick Murphy, the guy that was the boxer?
Yeah.
I mean, that program had such a profound effect on so many people, a good effect.
Yeah.
And for them to, I think it was terrible. Now, you know, they'll say, some people say to me, well, why didn't you have your son's box? You know why? Because they didn't want him.
Yeah.
If they would have wanted to, I would have never stopped them. As a matter of fact, I would have gone out of my way to help them.
Uh-huh.
As a matter of fact, I had a guy last week, a very prominent guy in Madison. He said, you know what you should do is start a club here in Madison. And you know what?
The CYO days are gone, apparently.
Yeah. And it's something that I've thought about doing for a long time. Because I think it's something that could really be beneficial to the kids. Not only the inner city kids, it would certainly help them a lot.
Yeah.
But to any kid that wanted to have the ability to express himself, as I said, like I did. I didn't have that, you know. Some kids don't have it. There are a lot of kids down there that could get into that program.
Yeah,
you know,
great.
It makes them
train.
For
the original, the reason the old Golden Gloves started.
Exactly.
For the same reason. Get
when I boxed in the Golden Gloves in Milwaukee and in Chicago, Mm-hmm. He had three rings going. Mm-hmm. Three rings going up until the final night. That's how popular it was. Of course, you were living in a different world, but
yeah.
Still, there are a lot of benefits that you could get from that program for the kids in Madison. A lot of them.
Good thought. Good thought.
You know, okay. Not only inner city kids, but any.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back a little bit again. Let me see. Dick, some of the guys you... Here, this is the those of you who are on the Wall of Fame. If you have a kind of knee-jerk reaction, of course, some way back there, Jolly Moore knows you don't
remember. Oh, yeah, well,
I
of course,
some of the guys that were with you.
First name I see is Gene Rankin.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's in the Alzheimer's home over here. That's just a shame. Yeah. Woody Swankett, I've met on occasions. A lot of people confused me with him because he had gray hair.
Yeah.
And he, by the way, he's the one that flew the plane that dropped one of the atomic bombs.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Truman Torgensen, Nick Lee, George Mark, Cliff Letts I've met, Millers I've met, Verdane John I've met, John Landensky, of course.
Yeah, now there you're getting to your...
All right, now he, when the first match that I had, now this was an intercollegiate, now this was one, remember they used to have the all-university...
Oh, and the fightness...
They had the all-university and the contenders tournament was first. Okay. That was for people that weren't on the team.
Yeah.
And then, and that was just before school let out for the Christmas break.
Okay.
And when you came back from the Christmas break, they had the all-university tournament, which was people that were on the team the preceding year, as well as people like me coming up.
Yeah.
And I fought John Landensky, and he beat me by a split decision, but he was a great guy. Don Dickinson, he's the guy that fought Chuck Davey three times and lost three times. Kel Vernon, he was a national champion. Vito Parisi probably fought the most talked about fight ever fought at the field house when he fought the guy from Miami, Art Sayi. Do you remember that?
I remember the fight.
Yeah. Art Sayi was a Greek guy. He weighed 225 pounds. I think he was undefeated. He was knocking everybody out. Vito Parisi was our heavyweight. He weighed at most 190 pounds and hadn't had a lot of fights. And he was here. It was intercollegiate. It was for the
NCAA
championship. Yeah. And I remember that was in 49, so I wasn't on the varsity yet. Yeah, it was from 49. And I was in the dressing room. And I remember John Walsh saying, I'll just stay away from him, just move around. Everybody was worried about Vito getting hurt. And he went out there and did just...
Vito was a refrigerator, wasn't he?
No, Vito wasn't that big. He was only 190 pounds.
Oh, I thought he was...
But this other guy was mammoth. Vito went out there and did just exactly... And stood there and slugged with him toe-to-toe. If you must not have been there because everybody talks about that fight. It was just bedlam. And he beat him. And he won. He won that shirt. Then, of course, Stevie Grembin. He was national champion at 119 pounds. Mm-hmm. Yeah, who, incidentally, went on to be a patent attorney for Polaroid.
Okay.
Very, very successful guy than me. And then Bob Rank, of course, when he graduated, he went into the service, and when he came out of the service, he went into the FBI. He was an FBI agent and decided that he wanted to become an attorney. So while he was married and had, I think, one or two kids, he quit the FBI while he was in Detroit and went to, what's the name of the school in Detroit? Some university that I can't think of. I'll think of it.
Yeah.
And he got his law degree, went out and... started his own law practice in Jackson, Wyoming.
Okay.
And subsequently became a district judge.
Oh. Yeah.
And was district judge there for many, many years. He and I have stayed real close.
Okay.
Red Wilson and I, who you've, of course,
Red,
we've gone out elk hunting with him a couple of times. I've gone out a couple of times by myself. And then last winter, my wife and I went out over the Christmas. My wife is the assistant principal at Queen of Peace grade school.
Oh, okay.
So during Christmas vacation, she and I went out, and Bob and Avis picked us up, and they live in a gorgeous home right on the overlooking the Tetons. And Bob had two snowmobiles of his own, and he picked up two others, and we went on a 200 and almost 300 mile trip through Yellowstone Park.
Oh my gosh.
The four of us, and it was absolutely glorious. And it was hard to describe. Huh. And as a matter of fact, he called last week.
Okay.
And said they got two more new machines, and he's expecting us to come out. But I don't know that we can. I don't know what they're doing. Yeah. Then Bobby Morgan, I've talked to Bob Morgan on the telephone yesterday. There's another fellow's name that isn't on here. Remember Terry Tynan?
Yeah.
Well, Terry Tynan was on a 1952 national championship team, and Bob called me to tell me that Terry's wife was rushed to the hospital, and she's got lung cancer.
Oh, jeez.
They took out a tumor, but it's gotten into her lymph node.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Sounds not so good. Then Pat Schreenan, he was on that 52 team, and Ray Zale, he was on it.
Yeah.
Bob Meath was on it. By the way, this is 1992, and it's the 40th year of that 52 dash, and we're going to... We've already made arrangements with Terry Morawski, who is with the National W Club, that we're going to have a little recognition of that 1952 team they have a banquet. The W Club has a banquet each year prior to the last football game, Friday night prior to the last football game. So we're putting out notices, and hopefully we'll get a good turnout for this.
Yeah.
And then he's going to have a little special room for us, and we're going to have for the boxers after the banquet. So we'll have a good time.
Okay.
Vince Ferguson, he was after me. Orville Pitts was after me. He was Orville's been an alderman, I think, in Milwaukee.
Yeah, you're right.
Dick Bartman, he was after me, and he's a, what does Dick do? I think he's an insurance man in Milwaukee. Uh-huh. Truman Sturtevant, I've never met. And Dean Flemons I met one time.
Okay.
I don't really know
okay.
him.
Did you socialize pretty much with guys from the team as a student?
I was married. I didn't tell you. I was married in 1949. And then we came up here, and there was a house on Francis Street that was all that. It's a three-floor flat. As a matter of fact, Red Wilson and I lived on the third floor before I was married.
Okay.
And the second floor was all football players. So, by golly, if right after we got married, this first floor of this house didn't become available. So Janet and I, my wife and I, we rented that.
Okay.
And we had four boxers that lived with us. Bob Rank, Bob Henschel, Terry Tynan, and I can't think of the little guy's name from Chicago. But he was later replaced with somebody else. But We had this house. It was right on the corner. You know, remember where Burkhalter Accordion Shop was?
Yeah.
And then the City Cab Company.
Yeah.
And that first flat.
Yeah. Okay.
It was owned by Delfriede. Delfriede owned it. And he rented. He wanted to rent to all these athletes. So it was three married couples that rented it, and there were two bedrooms to the side on each flat.
Yeah.
And each one of the married guys had four athletes.
Your wife must have gone nuts.
I paid $71 a month rent, and I collected $80. So it was a great deal.
Yeah, you know? Oh, sure.
It was right there, right off of... But anyway, you're talking about socializing. We lived together.
Yeah, sure you did.
And then in addition to that, that was just the five of us, but we stayed real close.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
And over the years, Bob Rank and I, he and I were co-captains. He and I have stayed real close,
and
co-captains and roommates and everything else.
Yeah, that's great.
So, and he's been really a successful guy. He's got four daughters. But yeah, we have.
Okay.
Elroy. You know, I always accuse Elroy of having tunnel vision on football, which he did and does have. But even he said, of all the athletes that he's been associated with over all the years at the University of Wisconsin, the most camaraderie is with the boxing group. And it's really true. If you get together, it's really kind of a, Yeah, we've still got a real close-knit family.
For sure. You were perhaps, in a sense, closer as guys on a boxing team. It's smaller for one
thing. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah. You're going to be closer that way. That's great. And I imagine John Walsh had a little something to do with...
No question. Huh? No question about that.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine, Dick. Thank you.
John Walsh, did I tell you? This was about, with time flies so fast, but in 19... What is this? This is 92. In 89, do you remember, one of the managers on our team was a fellow by the name of Gene Lynn, who's been very, very successful.
Lynn?
L-Y-N-N. Oh, Gene Lynn. And he's real big in the nursing home business. Hmm. And, you know, not only in the United States, but Canada. But anyway, to make a long story short, he's a great fisherman. And in 1989, John and I flew out to Seattle and we went to Anchorage, and from Anchorage we went to Bethel, which is on the coast of the Bering Sea.
Mm-hmm.
And from there we flew down to a little Eskimo village on, I can never pronounce it, it's a real funny sounding Eskimo, Iggujugi or something. And we met Gene Lim at an Eskimo camp on this river, and we went up the river 8 or 10 miles. And I'm telling you, we caught salmon like I was kind of worried about it because at the time John was 77 or 78, and you know that old sucker, he never missed a lick. He just kept right up with it.
Go on forever.
And now he's 80 now. He's just doing great. Yeah. Just doing great.
Smoking the damn pipe.
Yeah.
What was the toughest fight that you remember, Dick?
I would say probably the toughest fight for me was that very first one that I lost on a split decision to Herb Carlson.
Okay.
Yeah. I from the anxiety standpoint.
Yeah.
Well, it just so happened that there was the day my grandmother died, and they told me in the dressing room, but he was one tough customer.
He was.
Yeah. He was one tough guy.
Did you ever get knocked out?
No.
There weren't a lot of knockouts, though, in college boxing in those days,
no,
were there?
Not a lot. There were some, but not a lot.
How many knockouts did you have, or didn't you? I mean,
did I have myself? Yeah. I didn't have very many.
Didn't you?
I was not much of a puncher. I was, which in itself, you know, getting back to this business about, you know, you only...
In there to kill,
I'm not saying that you aren't out to try to hit somebody, sure. Obviously, yeah. But... You know, let me ask you, would you rather get hit with a padded boxing glove from a guy that weighs your weight, or a guy that maybe weighs 50 pounds more than you, that's got a steel mask and a helmet, obviously I'm a little prejudiced, but...
But that's, you're coming from...
Yeah, but I also know I'm speaking from personal experience, because I play both of them, so...
Okay, that's great. John, I said whatever I said when I was talking to John.
Yeah, that's
he came up with 56, is it? Counting.
Mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 official national championship teams, but actually it was the year before this or something that they were...
Because there wasn't
But they call it the mythical because they really didn't have it. Yeah,
yeah, he explained.
But you know, I did when we had a party for John about 2 or 3 years ago where everybody came, and I can't remember. I wish I could put my hands on that book real quick, but it seems to me there were I know this is right, 8 individual national championship teams, but there were 40 some individual people that won 60-some national championships. In other words, some people won 2 and some people won 3.
Hmm.
But there were... And
This is off the wall.
Yeah.
And it's my transcription. And for the transcriber, we're going over the list of people who won.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35. Is this the 35 national champion?
That's what's, okay. But now you said Terry Tynan ought to be on there.
No, he didn't win
national. Oh, okay.
No.
This is the Wall of Fame bunch.
And this is all the national champions?
Yeah, if I copied it right.
Okay. But see, there's more than this. There are, you just have the Wall of Fame, the two best in each weight. But there were other people that won national championships.
Okay, well, see, then
I'm sure of that. Now, for instance, well, no, this is more than the Wall of Fame because Bobby Meath wasn't on the Wall of Fame.
He wasn't. I don't know where to come up with him.
Let me see here. Neither was. And I guess I definitely would have to say, you remember Eli Thomas from Gonzaga?
Yeah, the name. Yeah.
Well, I think he was a two-time. One. Now, wait a minute. Did he win three times? He won. Yeah, he must have won three times. He won in Penn State, and in 1951, when I won at 155, he won at 165, mm-hmm. And that was Michigan State. I'm not sure if he was in it. Maybe he graduated the next year. I'm not really sure, but he was really a tough guy.
Yeah.
And a real nice person.
Did you graduate out of the team, or did you pull out your last year of school, or anything? I graduated.
Okay. Yeah.
52, that's
right. Yeah, 52 was my last semester.
Mm-hmm.
I went out in a blaze of defeat.
That's too bad. Son of a gun.
Well, it's the way it goes,
Yeah.
The way it goes.
All right, sir.